You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're having another 30 minutes with episode here on the Nine Finger Chronicles. My brain is mush, my friends. Anyway, today's guest, Mr. Eric Barber. Now, Eric works at Vortex. I've been able to get to know him over the last handful of years, and here's what I've figured out about the dude. He finds deer, and then he slays them. I should have called this the Slayer series, but anyway, it is the 30 Minutes with Eric Barber episode today. And here's all of the things that we are going to cover today. We are going to cover locating deer. We're going to talk about out-of-state hunts, locating deer in a short time frame, access routes, food-to-bed patterns. We're going to talk about deer behavior when we talk about food, when we talk about pressure, when we talk about, you know, if you can bump them, how likely are they to come back? All of the good stuff in today's episode. A lot of information in a short period of time. From the sounds of it, you guys are really enjoying these this little mini series that I'm putting out. Also, be sure to check out the Hunting Gear podcast that is getting put out every week, not only myself, but from Cameron Stover. He's helping me out, and he's dropping a couple episodes as well, and it's really informative stuff. I will be talking this week, if I can get the episode out, I will be talking about my new arrow setups, my sight issues that I've been having because of my kids, and some other stuff there. So I was up in my office. I heard some basketballs dribbling in my garage. My bows are hung up on one of the walls, and I heard a basketball bouncing, and then I heard a crash. And when I came downstairs, there was a basketball rolling in my garage, but there were no kids. And so I don't know who did it, but I looked and my bow was on the ground. So now I took my bow in the backyard yesterday and I started shooting, and for some reason I was off and I was shooting to the left. So I kept adjusting, shooting to the left, kept adjusting, shooting to the left. And I kept like having to adjust. Nothing seemed loose or out of shape. And then I saw the housing that surrounds the pins on my sight, and it usually looks like a perfect circle. Now it looks a little off. So what I'm assuming happened is that when that basketball knocked that bow off of the hook that it was on, it dropped and landed on the sight. And now I'm having sight. Now I'm having issues. So now my goal is to try to get a new sight. There's a specific sight that I like to use. For the past handful of years, I've been using the React sight from Trophy Ridge. And so now I got to go get my hands on another one of these. Obviously, in today's world, nothing is cheap anymore. And so the site that I want is like $250, $270, which that's an expense that I don't necessarily want to make, But if I want to continue to shoot, and like I talk about in the Hunting Gear podcast, you got to go with what you're confident with. And I just find that that site is legit. And so I'm going to probably just go buy another one. And so there's that. I got to go get in. It's not what I wanted to do this time of year, right? I should be shooting. I should be dialed in. Now I got to redial in again. And my arrows just got finished. They're flying extremely well. My bow is efficient. It's shooting extremely well. Now I just got to do the sight thing again. I just hope that the rest was not broken or bent as well. So that would just cause another headache. That's my life right now. On top of all that, you know, I'm coaching football 3 hours a day and getting into the swing of that. I'm looking forward to my upcoming hunt. Let's see, South Dakota I'll be leaving in less than 30 days, probably closer to 20 by the end of this weekend. And I had a conversation with a guy that I'm meeting out there. We got a cabin together. We're going to start in a specific spot. We're going to go look and try to track down some muleys. And then from there, we are going to try and bounce around if we can't find any muleys. And that's going to, I'll probably update that on a, update you guys all on that on another episode in the next couple weeks. So that's what's going on in my world. Let's get into the advertisers here. You know, before you hit the fast forward button, do me a favor and just listen to these. Take time out of your day to do this. This podcast is free. It's always been my intention to keep it free. And I just got to sell a little advertising to make that happen. So if you could just bear with me here while I run through these partners, and I would appreciate that. So if you're looking for a saddle or saddle hunting accessories, do me a favor. Go check out tether.com. If you're in the market for some new broadheads, look no further than Wasp broadheads. They are American made and offer a variety of fixed blade and mechanical options. WaspArchery.com. I do have a discount code, NFC20. Best optics on the market, hands down. Best people in the optics game, hands down. VortexOptics.com. We got rangefinders. We got rifle scopes, red dots, spotting scopes, binoculars, you name it, they have it. And then next on the list is FeedHub. FeedHub is a device that connects to your SpinCast feeder, and it allows you to remotely manage and observe your feeder. It allows you to monitor feed levels and schedule feeding times, amongst some other stuff. FeedHub, you go to MoultrieMobile.com and then go find the FeedHub and read up on a very efficient way to manage your feeders. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. I'm going to be running the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit all year round. I'm going to freshen it up anytime I walk by one of the mock scrapes. And then from there, they have a lineup of real and synthetic deer urines, including scent elimination products like sprays and laundry detergent. So you got to go to codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20. Next on the list is Huntworth. Huntworth offers, I mean, head to toe, warm to cold camo clothing. They have a brand new Vertec camo pattern that's been released recently. It's badass, and that comes in all of their old styles. So go check out huntworthgear.com. And then Reveal trail cameras. I've been running Reveal. Very, very easy to set up. You know, download the app, scan the QR code, and now you have a cellular trail camera that's completely set up. Outside of that, it's they take pictures, man. They do exactly what I want a cellular trail camera to do, and that's send me pictures of deer. It's very simple. It's very, very affordable compared to a lot of other brands that are out there. So go to tacticam.com and check out their new 3.0 series Reveal trail cameras. And then last, but definitely not least, Full Sneak Gear. If you're looking for some deer-inspired T-shirts, hats, sweatshirts, go check out fullsneakgear.com. That's my company. We're good to go, ladies and gentlemen. Let's pop into this episode. Enjoy. Have a great weekend. Spend some time with your family. Crack a couple beers. Shoot your bow. Shoot your gun. And enjoy the United States of America. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, where we continue this 30 minutes with series that I guess you could call this. And today's guest is from Vortex Optics and Public Land Slayer and bow hunting fanatic. And what else are you?
Oh, man. Gosh, I don't even know, Dan. You set the stage pretty high right there.
Yeah. So I was hoping, like, I like to do every once in a while to catch people off guard. I like to do like a monster truck.
Have you ever remember
those old monster truck videos? Like, coming this Sunday to the amphitheater in wherever, you know? So yep. I could have done that.
Standing 6'2", bald head, mustache.
I love it. And so you're on this series that we've done. Mr. Eric Barber, how are we doing today, man?
I'm great, man. It's Friday before Labor Day weekend, and September is finally here. So, I'm so fired up.
Yeah. Once Labor Day hits, in my book, summer's over. I always say Labor Day is the beginning of fall, end of summer, beginning of fall. Like, yep. what does Labor Day mean for you on your calendar?
I would say it is synonymous with, like you said, the kickoff of fall. Honestly, that is the time where I really start getting serious about trying to peg down a September buck. I know there's a lot you can do in, like, July and August, you know, scouting bean fields and all that good stuff. But, man, stuff changes so fast. That calendar flips from August to September. You got acorns starting to drop. You got beans turning yellow. Like, just so much happens that throws everything off that you would have learned in August. So for me, that's kind of my, like, lights a fire under me to really get going.
Yeah. Where do you sit this year for your September hunts, for your, you know, any October or November traveling that you're going to be doing?
Yeah. So I'm fired up, man. I have the first full week of Wisconsin off. A good buddy of mine, John Lewis, him and I worked together at Midwest Whitetail. Now he has the Just Hunt Club YouTube channel. He's going to be coming out and hunting with me in Wisconsin, bouncing around public land for that first full week of the season. Historically, September has been awesome for me. Like, I've killed in the last 4 years, I think I've killed 3 bucks in September on public in Wisconsin. And honestly, it's my favorite time to, I think it's your best odds of killing a public land buck in Wisconsin.
Yeah. You think so? September. Right, like
I do.
Let me preface this question. So, I understand, but you know, the mid September time frame usually means a big buck transition. When that velvet comes off, food sources change, things like that. So, my first question is: if you're very confident about this September time frame, how have you been able to react to this shift that is happening?
Yeah, dude, that's a great question. And honestly, it's something where, you know, we were kind of, you know, talking a little bit before we hit record. I have some cameras out right now. And honestly, I have one buck that I would shoot across like 5 or 6 cameras in 3 different counties. So you look at that at face value, it's like, man, this guy's got nothing going on. But I know that shift is coming. And that's where it really comes down to me trying to get ahead of like where they are going to go. So I know, like, I've got all of my confidence in a lot of spots that, like, yeah, there hasn't been deer in there thus far because they're probably feeding on a private bean field, or they're, you know, probably held up on, you know, this property, like one property away, whatever. But I know that shift is coming, and I know they're going to be in some of these areas that I'm hunting. And that's where it's really going to come down into me just like speed scouting, hunting a lot of different spots, burning a lot of boot leather, and really just moving around, being mobile that week until I find what I'm looking for, and then hopefully capitalizing.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great point. I've never been a whitetail hunter in September because Iowa's opener is October. So usually what I see, and this is from trail camera data throughout the years, the shift happen. Some bucks go, some bucks stay. And then identify their new early season pattern. And I've jumped on it in October 1st, but I've never hunted in that space where the shift occurs. So
yeah,
are you then going off of historical data and knowledge about where deer shift to?
Some of it is historical, but I would say equally as important is trying to just hunt them down, right? Like, you know, and I use that term, like, hunting nowadays is guys sitting back on the couch waiting for cell cam notifications. I do it myself too. Like, I'm waiting for a cell cam notification to come in, and then that'll tell folks when to get in there and hunt. But to me, hunting is like pursuing, chasing, getting out, getting ahead. So that's where it is. Like, for, I'll use a spot as example. 2 years ago, we had a really bad drought here in Wisconsin. I think I mowed my grass like 5 times that summer. It was horrible. There was a spot of soybeans that got planted really late and got hit with some really timely rains. And of all the beans that I knew about, they were the greenest and best looking beans in the entire area. And they just happened to be on a piece of public land, and they were 80 yards from the parking lot. So hunting media tells you don't hunt food sources, don't hunt field edges, especially on public land. I'm like, man, this is the best looking stuff here. I'm going to start on this field edge. And long story short, I had some great sits. I ended up killing a buck on that field. I haven't been back since. I actually pulled the camera off of it yesterday because I always try to catch lightning in a bottle twice. But man, that was one of those spots where it was good that year. It was good that week of that year. Anytime outside of that window, like, you're not going to kill a buck on that field, you know? So that was just a byproduct of me getting out, getting ahead of it, and again, to your point, kind of like capitalizing on that shift, and I knew where they were at that specific time and made it happen.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about what you just said there is the fact that you were playing the cards that were dealt at that exact moment, right? It's not like, you know, like, you had to go out, you had to, you know, observe. Okay, we've observed this bean field. It is green. It is lush. Anybody who knows anything about deer hunting, especially in the Midwest, deer love green, wholesome, good-looking beans, right? And so, as far, like, I feel like when someone says don't hunt the field edge, because I rarely hunt the field edge, but also I rarely have green beans in October when So with that said, I love that you looked into the scenario and broke it apart and said, hey, it may only be 80 yards from the parking lot, but bingo bango, it's right here. Like, everything's telling me to hunt right here. Now, did you get trail camera pictures of that buck to basically secure your thoughts? Like, hey, dude, I got to be here.
So it's funny. I never got trail cam photos of that buck specifically. I did end up getting some photos of him at night. I never had daylight photos of him, but I would get a lot of like does and fawns during daylight hours. And I'd look at that camera and I'd be like, man, there's so many deer back there that I can't see. It basically, the camera kind of like pointed up a hill. So you know how it is. You have very limited visibility. Yeah. And a trail camera photo is a snapshot of one place at one specific time. Fact. Of, you know, a little window of activity, what you can see in front of it. So anyways, I kind of went off of like, hey, I know there's deer hitting this in daylight. I'm only seeing probably the tip of the iceberg. Long story short, went in there on opening day, which would have been Saturday, like give or take September 15th. Saw a 2-year-old 8-pointer, a bunch of does that day. Went back then Monday after work, would have been probably the 17th. And I saw a really nice, you know, big, probably 140-inch 9-pointer buck I was for sure going to shoot. He ended up coming out in a spot that I've never seen deer come out of. So I adjusted that setup a little bit. The next day I went back in because it was a spot that you could just keep hunting over and over. You know, it's with it being so close to the road, access was incredibly easy. Went back in again, and really nice buck came out, different buck, not that 140-inch 9, just a really nice, clean, tall 8-pointer. came, did it right, and shot him at 30 yards. It was it was perfect.
That's awesome. And I love that. I love that mentality, is looking for the best sign at the moment that you're there. And now, I mean, that's even in Wisconsin, right? So it seems like even in that moment when you had time, right, you have time to stretch it out if you wanted to. You know, you could have easily said, you know what, I'm not going to hunt September. I'm going to wait for the good time, and I could go do it. But that is also how you hunt when you go out to a different state. Okay.
Absolutely.
And so now I want to throw a couple scenarios out there. And I want to talk about this upcoming year specifically. What states, out of state trips are you taking this year?
So I'll be in, South Dakota.
Okay.
I've got North Dakota is kind of like always an option for me, 'cause you can buy that tag over the counter. So as far as out-of-state ones, the ones that I know I'm going to be at is South Dakota. I'm kind of going all in on that. It's going to be a mid-October type deal. Haven't been in this area since 2019. So I'm going off totally dark intel and just kind of seeing what happens. If the cards fall right, I do have a lot of tags here in Wisconsin. So I'm going to prioritize Wisconsin a lot. But if the cards fall right, I kill a couple bucks here at home, I'll bounce south and get over into Illinois as well.
Okay, this is perfect. I want to talk about this South Dakota hunt. Are you going for whitetails?
Either or. I'm going to chase mule deer in the mornings, just a lot of glassing. And if I get on a, if I end up finding a spot where whitetails are hitting, like, you know, a hay field or something, I'm not going to be too proud to go after a whitetail. I would absolutely shoot a nice, like, and honestly, any buck out there in an out-of-state hunt is going to be something I'm excited about.
Yeah, perfect. All right. You said on South Dakota, you're going to an area that you haven't been to in a while. In the past, South Dakota has been one of those states where water really affects where, like, when I mean water, I mean the amount of rain. The first year that I went to South Dakota was absolutely bananas. They had a very abnormally wet year, which meant grass and food were everywhere. And so the deer didn't have to go too terribly far to find food and or water. Okay, so now that you've been to some of these locations and you're starting from scratch, essentially, what are you looking for to start, like, when you pull up there, maybe you spend the night, you're getting ready to roll, what is the first thing that you're going to look for when you get out of the truck and you start actually hunting this out-of-state hunt?
Yeah, first thing I'm going to do is really, like, locate a bunch of little isolated springs or cattle tanks, you know, and those cattle tanks are things that, you know, aren't always marked on maps. Oftentimes they're not. And to find them, you really need to, like, zoom all the way in and, like, really look for finite details. So you can actually see them, you know, like, you'll actually see congregations of, like, where the cattle have kind of beat down their paths. And then you'll.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
See, like, a little black dot, and that's the cattle tank. So I'll look at those on the map. But really, once I roll up and get out there, I'm going to just look for concentrations of deer, whether that is around a water source, or I've also hunted out there in the past and I've found, you know, two of the best muley bucks I've ever chased out there were bedded in the middle of just some flat grassland type stuff with very gentle topography. And that's why they were there. They could see for forever. It was relatively flat and they had all the advantage to them. And really the only reason I found those deer is I knew there was a concentration. I did a lot of driving on roads. I, you know, kind of took note, hey, I'm seeing a bunch of deer back in that stuff. I bet I can get around to get into the public and they'll be there. Sure enough, that's exactly what happened there.
Yeah.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Yeah. And so you locate these, you're doing a lot of driving, you're doing a lot of scouting. Does that take priority over actually hunting first for you, or are you doing both at the same time?
It does. I would spend my first, so I'll be there for 8-9 total hunt days. I'm going to connect weekends. So like I'll leave on a Saturday and then I'll come back the following Sunday. So I'll have like 8 or 9, give or take, total hunt days. I would rather sacrifice 2, even 3 days up on the front end to really cover a lot of ground and just find pockets of deer where I know they're at. Because again, I'm not going to be super choosy, but I've also found that you can find some really good ones by doing that, by just isolating pockets of, hey, I know there's a lot of deer here. Now I just covered 15 miles and I really haven't seen much. Well, now, equally as important, I know where not to go. And now, you know, so I can kind of focus in on those pockets that I've identified.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You get up there, you start scouting, you locate a deer. And I'm just going to go off of a scenario that I know. And usually there's a little bit of overlap between muleys and whitetails, but in this scenario, we're going to go after whitetails. And usually it's in kind of a river bottom type setting.
Yep.
Maybe there's water access, maybe there's not. Walk us through, like, once you've identified this whitetail deer in a river bottom setting, maybe it's a bed to food pattern, maybe it's not, I don't know. Walk us through what that next step is for you.
Yeah, that hits home because that's very similar to the scenario I'll be in. So ideally, what I would have done is I would have glassed that buck up, maybe going back to bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's ideal. And I kind of know where he is, give or take. Because a lot of that country, that those river bottoms that you're talking about, sometimes they can be as narrow as 40 yards wide. You know, it can be a little like vein that just runs up off a creek bed or something.
Yeah.
And those whitetails will get sucked into that cover. So what I'm going to be paying attention to is exactly where he went back to bed. I'm going to be watching his, like, demeanor. Did he go in there, like, pretty quick? Or did he take his time? Was he going really slow, browsing his whole way back? And the difference there is if he browsed his whole way, took his time, I bet he's not super far into that creek. On the flip side, if he went in there on a mission, he could be a little bit, you know, of a ways off, meaning that I'm going to have to, you know, essentially get a little bit lucky in terms of like pegging where he's at. So it's going to be a lot of time on the glass. Once I have identified like where he went back, really it's all going to boil down to access. So I'm going to try to get into that spot as close and as tight as I possibly can once I determine, hey, it's time to hunt. So that actually might not even be that same exact day. You know, I might watch that area for a day or 2 days and really like find exactly where he's coming out. Cause I would rather have one very informed sit or two very informed sits than five. Oh, I know he's roughly here, but I don't know exactly where. Once I know that, then I'm going to go in and it'll be a much more like calculated plan. So I'll have saddle gear, to be able to get up in a tree. But I'll also be ready to set up on the ground. So I just bought it last night, a little Montana decoy, those little two-dimension decoys. They pack into like, you know, I think it's like 30 ounces or something like that, just over 2 pounds. And that would be a tool that I kind of have in my arsenal. I don't know that I'm going to like for sure go and deploy that right away. It would boil down to deer demeanor. What are they doing? How are they acting? If I got a little bit of a cold front, deer kind of feeling a little bit like on edge, I'm probably going to be proactive and just get that decoy out there. It's not a very intimidating decoy. It's like a little four-pointer. It's the freshman buck from Montana decoy. So if anyone's familiar with that thing, it's like a very it's a year and a half, 2.5-year-old buck, right? So it's something that is going to definitely hopefully going to draw deer to it, but also not intimidate, you know, a nice 2.5-3.5-year-old deer that I would consider shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of times, and in this scenario, especially in South Dakota, bed and food are really close together, right? You have the river bottom, which usually has a strip of trees on each side of the river. And maybe in a scenario where there's a bend in the river, then you have a peninsula that is full of cover for them to sit. But then usually agriculture, like a green plot, clover, or alfalfa or something is really close to the river. How are you approaching a scenario where, I watched him go back to bed, but I have to be very careful because he could potentially be bedding really close to this food?
Yeah. What I'm going to look for is any little dried creek bed or any little, like, secret access that I can get into that stuff tight and be out of their line of sight, drop an elevation. So, in one of those plain states I was hunting a couple years ago, this was actually in North Dakota. It was a very similar situation. I glassed these bucks for 3 days. Finally got the right access to get into this spot. And on my very first sit-in, I knew I had a very exact pin of where those deer were getting up out of their bed. I went in there on September 8th at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's getting dark, probably around like 7:30, 8 o'clock that time of year. Slipped in down a main river channel, and then off that river channel was a small offshoot, one of those creek bottoms that we're talking about. I slipped up that creek bottom, and I kind of peeked my head over that creek bottom, and there was a doe and two fawns walking at like 30 yards, and I just like eased right back into it. And I remember thinking to myself, man, I am in the middle of these things right now. I did blow one deer out of there shortly after that, assuming it was a doe or a young buck. Anyways, I didn't go a whole lot further. I knew I was where I needed to be. I got right up in a tree, and I ended up killing one of the bucks that I watched the past couple nights at 4:30 in the afternoon on September 8th.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nuts. Okay. So I have another scenario. You're up there, you find a deer. Maybe it's through trail cameras. Maybe it's through, glassing or whatever the case is, but you have very limited access that you watch a deer, maybe go back into a bedroom, and you fill in the part of the country that you're going to be in with this scenario. And for the listeners, fill in your own scenario here, maybe on one of your properties. But you're hunting public. The west side, and maybe you can only access it from one area. The rest are surrounded by private. That's no-go, okay? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a small piece, and the wind is not in your favor. You look at the forecast and it's like, holy shit, I got the same wind for the next 3 days and I leave maybe in 4 days. How are you approaching a scenario like that?
What is the, do we got any precipitation in the forecast, or is it, what do we got as far as like, environmentals?
Let's do this. There's a cold front came through. That's what got the deer on their feet. You saw him through this cold front, and now it's three straight days of a north wind or a west wind, whatever. There's no change because the front has already come through.
Yeah. I'm going to be super aggressive. Reason for that is, as soon as that front comes through, that first day, that second day, maybe, like, those are your really, really good days. everything after that, you've got kind of mundane, similar weather. So even if it is, you know, 10, 15 degrees below seasonal temps, they like that change. So that first day, that second day, those are the days I'm really targeting. So that's why I'm going to be super aggressive, even if it's not ideal and if I'm on limited time. So I'm going to pretty much accept that, yeah, I'm probably going to spook some deer. But my goal is going to be to make sure that I don't spook the deer that I want to shoot. Obviously, that can really backfire for you. If you get in there and you spook the wrong doe that runs past the wrong buck, it's game over. But that's a roll of the dice I'm willing to take. So I'll get in there. I'll go in much earlier than, what would make sense. So let's say it is middle of October. Why would anyone be hunting at noon, 1 o'clock? But that's probably the time I'm going in there because I know I have very limited time and I need every card in my favor. So I'm going to go in there at a time where those deer should be bedded, high noon, and take my time. And because as soon as you start feeling rushed, that's when you start moving too fast. That's when you end up spooking a deer. I'm going to take a lot of time as I'm going through there, just like take a step, almost like you're still hunting. Take a step, glass, take a step, glass. Because in those plain states, you have a whole lot less understory than you do here in the Midwest. You got, in the Midwest, you got buckthorn, multiflora rose, all these high stem count things that makes it really hard to glass. You can find a buck out west in those plain states pretty easily by just like taking your time going through. Once I get to a spot that I think is in the right area, general area, I'm going to get up that tree. Ideally, I'll be able to get up into a tree. But I want to be set up on a feature that I'm very confident that the deer are going to come by. So that might be a ditch crossing at the head of that creek bottom. That might be an inside corner of a barbed wire fence that runs out, on the backside of a private alfalfa field. But I'm essentially going to go for broke, even if that does come at the expense of spooking a couple deer.
Gotcha. Do you ever give up on a deer and pack up and go to a different location?
Oh, man. Yeah. I would say if I spook that deer hard, I will give up on it. And the reason is my hesitation there is because like, if you do spook him, obviously his setup worked. So he will likely come back. But in a short time frame, I'm talking 5 days, if I spook a buck real bad, I'm probably going to go on and try to hunt the next buck, try to hunt the next spot. So the more fresh sits that I can get in good areas, the better. So that goes back to the start of this, isolating those pockets of deer. If I totally blow one up and I just did the wrong thing, the wind swirls in there and it sends the whole river bottom out running up into the hills, I'm probably going to move on to the next concentration and try to just target the best buck in that concentration. Even if I don't know what that buck is, I'm going to just assume, hey, I've seen, 15-ish deer, give or take, in this general area, in this like 1 to 2 mile stretch. I'm going to find the best habitat, the best cover, and throw it all at that and just roll the dice and assume that there's a good one in that spot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a balance that I'm not even sure I've figured out yet is when to go and when to stay. Cause I've hunted some deer where I've seen them for multiple days in a row do the same thing, but I don't want to say there's ever a lock tight, like it's never the deer is 100%, but there are some places where whether it's a mule deer or a whitetail where they have a really, really good advantage. And maybe it's because they're bedded up next to a piece of private and access is really horrible for us. But man, I've that's something that I struggle with every year is, okay, how many days of this trip am I going to give this particular deer? And that's why for me, I'm to the point, especially with mule deer, if it's legal, I'm going to shoot it. Right. That's just me. But for whitetail, it's a little bit different. I would go after a decent average whitetail, but it just seems that especially in states with limited cover, right? With limited cover, you have to have, like, you can't use any cover to get close to these things, right? You have to use wind and basically the lowest possible depression in the landscape to sneak in on them. And so that's something that I still struggle with.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, man. It's like I think back to the first year I hunted whitetails in the Dakota, or I hunted deer in the Dakotas. I was in South Dakota in this specific instance. This would have been 2017. I went out there for like a little 4-day, you know, it was Labor Day weekend. It actually, you know, was when they still offered over-the-counter tags to non-residents, and you could start hunting September 1st. Maybe it was actually 2018. So I went out there in 2018 and, I blew a huge whitetail out of, this little like island of trees in between these huge milo fields. And, I mean, to this day, it's one of the biggest whitetails I've ever seen. I blew that thing out of there and you could tell like he was holed up in that, because when he got out, he was running through these milo fields in the middle of the day and had no idea where to go. And he kind of like looked very frantic and then just boom, bolted over the next ridge. I never hunted that spot. Hindsight, if I could do that all over again, I would have, and I still obviously have that pin on my map, but it's like, I would have pinned that spot. I would have went right in there that next day and I would have essentially approached it like how we kind of mentioned. I would have went in there at like 11 a.m., noon, middle of the day, but I would have went in there with the wind in my face, arrow knocked as I start to get inside that red zone distance. I probably wouldn't have even brought a tree stand, because I mean, we're talking like there were two or three trees in this little depression. And I just would have gone into that with confidence that, hey, that buck was here yesterday. He or another buck is probably in this area. And I'm going to just go in there. I'm going to approach it like I know he's bedded in that, because that's going to make you move more confidently. That's going to make you slow down, be more intentional. And I'm going to just creep up to that and I'm going to give it the rest of the day. Even if that just means kind of sitting there, crunched down and on the edge of the field to milo, or the grass to milo transition, and just hopefully wait him out. Hopefully that deer stands up and I'll get a crack at him.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole, I've seen it, right? I mean, cover, especially for whitetails out west, or, I would say cover is the most important thing in any state for a whitetail as far as what you should be looking for. I say that with a grain of salt, because I've seen deer bed in wide open CRP multiple days in a row as well. So it's trying to find that balance, man. I think it's a struggle for probably any hunter. The last question I kind of want to ask you is, it's a question that gets asked a lot to people, but I want to ask you about, I don't want to use the words mental toughness, but maybe more of a feeling the crunch. Like, it's like time is starting to move, right? And it seems like towards the last couple days of any hunt, time seems to be moving faster, especially if you haven't located a big deer. How do you handle that? I don't, maybe it's pressure, maybe it's not, but time is running out. Are you doing anything different on day one than you are on day five?
I would say by that time, it's funny. Those are, you're spot on. That is when the pressure is at its highest, but that's also when your sits are the most informed. So I kind of have that confidence of if I haven't totally blown up an area, you know, yeah, I've got maybe one, maybe two sits left, whatever that is. But hopefully I've got my two best sits ahead of me, because I have more intel now than I had on the first day. So I kind of approach it from that standpoint of like, yes, I'm feeling the pressure. I definitely like no one wants to take a week of vacation, come back to work and be like, oh, I've got a bunch of pictures of sunsets, you know? But, you know, so you do feel that pressure. But anyways, I'm going to approach that the same way that I would approach like a ideal condition day here in my home state that I've got some intel on, right? Like, think about the difference there. Like, you're super excited hunting your home state in on October 30th after you've had months and months of like trail cam intel, some scouting, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's no different than day six of a 7-day hunt, right? That's the most intel that you're going to have throughout that 7 days is right now. So whatever I've learned throughout that week, I'm going to just go all in on that. Shoot, you know, swing for the fences because you don't have, you know, just the luxury of I'm going to come back next week because you might be driving halfway across the country. And then the other thing too, to kind of like back to the pressure thing, you want to shoot a buck super bad, you know, like when I'm on those trips, I want to come home with something. But also don't get so distracted by the Instagram pressure to post that gripping grin photo, because really at the end of the day, you know, I think back to that first trip out to South Dakota in 2018, I spend more time thinking about how I could hear the coyotes every night in the tent and, you know, just felt like I was in the middle of nowhere than I do like the little 1x2 muley that I missed, you know, like, sure, it would have been awesome to kill that buck. I've killed plenty of bucks since then. I don't sit there and reminisce over every single detail of shooting that deer, but I do sit there and think about, you know, the freeze-dried meal I had in camp with my buddy, you know, and you know, just sitting there in a tent surrounded by nothing but prairie, hearing coyotes in the distance, and just like this unmanipulated landscape. Like, that's what you hang on to. So as much as you do have that pressure to shoot that buck, like, got to keep that perspective of like, man, we're here to have fun. We're here to, you know, experience something. And if you're so distracted by the end goal, you're going to miss the details.
Hey, that's the perfect place to end this, man. Love that closing statement there. Eric, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and chit chat with me. And I'm sending you good vibes for all of your hunts this year, man. Good luck.
I appreciate it, Dan. Likewise, man. We'll keep in touch and hope to send you some gripping grins here pretty quick.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.